That's my best gavel, because I have no idea where the gavel is, so... Oh, I can't even do that. There we go. Okay. Not only my gavel for the day.
Is there only one? Oh,
they're all stapled together, yeah. Good evening, folks. Welcome to our final Students' Council meeting of 2013. Glad you all made it to the new room. A couple of announcements before we get going. I've just a quick look around. I think I counted 20 voting members right now, so quorum is 18. So please don't go running off. If you need a bathroom break, I'd recommend calling a recess. It's a fairly short meeting, so we may not get to one. But if you can help it, please try not to run away. Secondly, a reminder for proxies or any folks that were elected in the by-election that haven't signed a non-disclosure agreement yet, you can get that filled out to me before we do scholarships. That would be fantastic. And going part and parcel with that, for folks that have signed one of those, you can come grab a nomination form package, which is a package of all the completed nomination forms, and we will, after the presentation today, do the voting. I have some ballots for that. I'll give you a little bit of time, as I said in the email, before we vote to do some reading on that as well. And a reminder that all of our council meetings for next term are in this room, so if you like it, we have a couple of screens, so I'll try and keep the order paper up on the side as we get going. But with that, I believe that's all I have for announcements, so we'll jump into attendance. President Kuzma?
Present.
Vice President Chellen? Vice President Woods?
Present.
Vice President Lay?
Present.
Vice President Lau? Governor Kelly?
Present.
Councillor Battelle?
Present.
Councillor Borden? Councillor Mills?
Present.
Councillor Hanwell? Councillor Bannister?
Present.
Councillor Schiavone? Councillor Mohammed?
Present.
Sorry, I'm just turning this mic down. It's bugging me. Councillor Grokey?
Present.
Councillor Minarski?
Present.
Councillor Valdez? Councillor Corbett? Councillor Horvat?
Present.
Councillor Redman? Councillor Malik? Councillor Hamid? Councillor Hansra? Councillor Lamb? Councillor Morris?
Present.
Councillor Sim? Councillor Nguyen?
Present.
Councillor Champagne?
Present.
Councillor Speakman?
Here.
Councillor Hodgson?
Present.
Councillor Huang? Councillor Zing? Ms. Schroeder for Councillor Grahan. Councillor Binchik. Councillor Douglas.
Yep.
And I am here, Mr. Doomshell. Okay. With that, we will jump into our presentations. Item 2A, Peter Lougheed Leadership College, presented by John and Bunny Ferguson, sponsored by Vice President Chellen. Do we have another mover? President Kuzma, thanks so much. And a seconder, Vice President Lay, thank you very much. Is there any objection to hearing this presentation? Seeing none, we will proceed. So you fine folks have 30 minutes, including questions and answers. Although if you go a little over, it's a fairly light agenda, so it wouldn't surprise me if Vice President Woods.
Motion to suspend standing orders.
Thought that might be coming. Do you want to limit it to a different time or just no limit?
No limit.
No limit? Okay. Motion to suspend standing orders to allow the presentation to go on as long as it needs to. Councillor Grokey seconds it. All those in favor? All those opposed? That motion carries. I have to get used to spanning a little bit more. This is a wider room. Okay, with that, you guys have as long as you need. Floor is yours.
All right, give us a second to figure out where we're going to stand.
Yeah, you're welcome to stand behind, in front.
Where do you want to be?
However you'd like.
You're okay?
Yep.
Okay.
Let's sneak out of your guys' way here.
Okay, well, I'm just going to hold these notes because I need these to kind of take you through it before we get into the question and answers. First of all, I just want to thank all of you at the Students' Union for giving us the opportunity to share with you the concept of the Peter Lougheed Leadership Initiative and also just to take you through the story of how it evolved and to where it's got to this date. And when I say evolve, this is a concept that's continually evolving. Every time we meet with someone, there's something new, something that comes out of it to enhance the whole program. The Peter Lougheed Leadership Initiative is the wish of the Lougheed family to honor the legacy and memory of Peter Lougheed. The vision is to create a leadership development initiative here in Alberta that will be recognized nationally and internationally as one of the world's finest. It is a collaboration between the University of Alberta and the Banff Centre, which are the two institutions for which Peter Lougheed was most passionate. The family had numerous naming requests, including the Calgary Airport. However, the initiative was their idea, and it was their choice. Under the umbrella of the initiative is the Peter Lougheed Leadership Institute at the Banff Centre and the Peter Lougheed Leadership College at the U of A. The Peter Lougheed Leadership Initiative, which has no legal status, will coordinate joint programs, faculty-student exchanges, forums, and an annual international summit on a subject of importance to Canada and the world. The initiative is governed by an advisory board, a board that consists of three appointees by the University of Alberta, three appointees by the Banff Centre, and four appointed by the Lougheed family. As you may know, the Banff Centre is a non-degree granting institution which focuses primarily on the arts and leadership management programs for existing and emerging leaders. The Peter Lougheed Leadership Initiative will significantly enhance the leadership programs at the Institute. The Peter Lougheed Leadership College at the U of A will be an interdisciplinary undergraduate college. The purpose of the college is to significantly enhance a leadership culture at the U of A by developing an interdisciplinary undergraduate residential college and assist all faculties in developing leadership programs and provide support for such financial support for such programs. Undergraduate students from all faculties with at least 2 years' experience on campus will be encouraged to apply to attend the college. Students will be chosen primarily on character and leadership potential. The student experience in the collegial residence will include mentoring, lectures, an academic program, an international experience, community service, and a program at the Banff Centre. I'll turn it over to Bunny to give a little background.
Okay, thank you, John. I, too, want to thank you for having us here tonight, and as I see your cheeks munching on the pizza, that's our staple food on a night like tonight, so I just might take you up on the offer after. How did we all get started? It actually started 3 years ago. And it was then when Indira Samarasekara, your president, invited us, John and I, for dinner at her home to talk about leadership in general. So we ended up sharing with her our background, where we came from, born and raised Edmonton, Albertans, and she herself, born from Sri Lanka, and we exchanged lots of stories. But we ended up talking about ordinary Albertans. Albertans who came from very humble backgrounds but went on to become great Albertans, and I think we can name several in that area. We also talked about industry and professions, and keep in mind that was 3 years ago, and industry and professions were screaming for leaders back then. Well, today they're still screaming. Some things just don't change. So we talked about that a lot. And how can we make a difference? And she says to the two of us, I'd really like you to think about the possibility of a leadership college on campus. How can we develop young students to become, and give them more tools, or some tools even, and help them develop their leadership skills so they can become those leaders for tomorrow that we just discussed? So we actually left for dinner. You never get a free lunch, right? I got into the car, I said to John, oh my gosh, what did we just agree to here? Before we knew it, we were in it. But we were in it because it sounded good, the concept, we believed in it, but it needed more meat around it. So in our typical way of discussing, we like to reach out to other people to get more advice, not unlike what we're doing right today. So we brought together 25 people from different disciplines, from business, from the arts, from the military. We have students, we have volunteers, different ages and different cultures. And we wanted to discuss the same question that she put to us. So we said, what would a leadership college look like to you? Well, we definitely had idea exchanges, and the words that came out were undergraduate. You have to get your feet wet before you swim, kind of thing. Interdisciplinary, and I'm so glad we did include the different cultures, because that was really important in the global world we live in. It's hugely important, as we all know. But character and leadership potential were the two items that really, really came out. Marks, yes, and you're all in exams and all, but character and leadership potential were really key. And a residential experience, so you can really learn from your peers and be with like-minded people, and mentoring from people that we can bring in that can spend more time with the students. And as far as the size of a college, they said it has to be large enough for critical mass, but small enough yet that you can build those relationships. And so 150 students are what was brought out. So we took this home. It wasn't unlike what we were kind of on line with. So we had another discussion with Carl Amrine, who was the provost at the time, now on leave. And he listened to it all. He's very supportive of it. And he says, why don't you run a pilot project in a faculty? I thought, yeah, get your feet wet before you swim and learn as you go along. So back then, Dean Mike Percy was the dean of the School of Business at the time and very supportive of leadership and what was needed out in the business community for sure, which he was well aware of in politics as well. And he moved over, and then Joseph Doucette moved in as interim dean, and Joseph was just as keen on leadership. So to make a long story short, the faculty that was chosen was the School of Business, which is what we're very comfortable in, too. It's all what we've done at the university. So that summer, keep in mind this is still 3 years ago, with John's involvement with the military, we were invited to go down to Kingston, Ontario, to the Royal Military College, to RMC, and to Toronto, to the Toronto Military College, to seek their advice on how they teach leadership at the military level. So we thought, well, rather again than the two of us go, we'll invite Dean Joseph Doucette to come along with us. So we spent the weekend down there, and I must say, they absolutely rolled out the red carpet for us. They had as many people around the table as all of you would be from every facet of their leadership training, including the students who were presently in the program. It was a phenomenal experience to listen from their perspective on leadership. So we came home with lots of ammunition, I'll say, from the military. No pun included there. But we put our thoughts together a little more in a structured way. So again, Dean Joseph Doucette had to make the first move, and that was to get approval from GFC, General Faculty's Council, for the leadership certificate program in his faculty, which is the pilot project that we're looking at, and it is in progress and has been now, we're in the second year. So just to give you an idea of the pilot project, and I'm sure a lot of you are familiar with it, but it started in years, like 2 years ago, 2012 to 13, where it was an application process throughout the faculty, anybody in the undergraduate program of the BCom program. So it was by application and interview, and it was shortlisted down to 20 people, and 12 people were chosen for the program. Well, I can honestly say, as we're learning our, feeling our way through this and watching the students, we've never been so encouraged by a program that has just elevated those students in growth, in confidence, in teammanship, and just bonding together as students. It's been an incredible experience for them. And for those 12 students in the program that first year, we brought in 18 people for mentoring. And these were people, again, we tried to pick everybody from different disciplines. We had like Rick Hansen, who came from BC for a half a day to spend time with them. We had Rick George from Suncor and Calgary, Stephen Jaroslawski from Montreal, Margaret McCain is coming from Maple Foods. We're trying to, you know, reach all out to give them a real variety. And it wasn't too long before one of the students said to me, I'm starting to see a pattern. Leadership is all the same, no matter where you are. And that was really coming through. And not just from the mentoring, but from their academic course that they were taking as well, which has been very impressive for the basics on leadership. So in year two then, these 12 students have moved into their second year. So again, in the School of Business, there's still a pilot project, we have a second set of students on the application and interview process. Well, by word of mouth, the previous year when 20 students applied, this past year 48 students applied for the same positions, which put a lot of pressure on the ones choosing and selecting these. So 16 this year were chosen. So we now have 28 students in the pilot project. They take separate classes, but at times they do meet together. But the second year students are more in an international side of their learning, so they get an international experience as well. So that kind of gives you an idea of the pilot project, which we're very proud of, the professors are very proud of. Everybody in that program is extremely proud of what they're learning, and we are extremely pleased. So I'll just go ahead with the name then, too.
Sure.
The Peter Lougheed Leadership Initiative, where did it come from? Well, prior to Peter's death on September 13th, 2012, John and I have known Peter and Jeannie Lougheed for years. He's been served on John's board and political arena as friends. We always thought, and individually actually, who would be a good Albertan to name a college after. And it was interesting, we both had the same person in mind. Because I don't think anybody can disagree with the fact that Peter Lougheed was always a leadership role model, be it in his career for 40 years in politics or in business on boards or back to being on campus as a U of A student union president. So unfortunately for us and definitely for him, because of Peter's illness, we were not able to share this with him personally. So after the state funeral and the family funeral, which we attended for sure, we met with Peter's son, Stephen Lougheed, and explained to him what we want to do and asked if we could have his name attached to this. And as John mentioned, at that time, you can imagine how popular this was in many areas. But we just actually brought Stephen to tears. Because he said this would be the family's wish and it would be my dad's wish. He said the two most passionate institutions in his life is definitely his alma mater, the University of Alberta, and the Banff Center. He said if you could figure out how to do a collaboration with those two institutions, and he went like this, he said we could have a globally recognized Leadership Development Center right here in Alberta. So again, back in the car we go, and now the picture is getting much larger, much more complex, and the whole idea took on a whole new look. And we certainly, when you try to put two institutions together, we are not the decision makers in that role. We can keep the ball rolling. So we went then back to Indira, Samarasekara, and to Doug Goss, the board chair. We went to the Banff Center, to Jeff Melanson, the president there, and also to Brenda Mackey, who is the board chair. all of them were very, very supportive and committed to the concept of what we're trying to do. So discussions then took place. We met with many people in the community, bouncing off the ideas. John said this is still moving along. We've spoken with the deans. We're speaking with you tonight to try and explain as we move along this rolling process. So I'm getting dry in my throat, so I'm going to pass that back to you. I'm going to get more water.
Well, I'm going to just talk a little bit about the uniqueness of the college, sort of leaving the aspect of the Institute at the Banff Center out of it somewhat, because the college is the most important part, I know, to all of you. But the Peter Lougheed Leadership College will be a focal point on campus for developing a campus-wide leadership culture. The location on the North Campus at 111th Street and Saskatchewan Drive, overlooking the North Saskatchewan River and the Legislature Building, we feel is most fitting for a facility named after Peter Lougheed. It just seemed like the ideal location, particularly if you get on the location, you look out over the Legislature Building and you feel, man, you can feel like you can see what it was like if Peter was there. The college will include a residence for 144 students. We'll come back into doing the question and answer how we arrived at all of these numbers and so on. Designed in 12 pods, which we call forums, of 12 students each. Each forum will have students from various faculties with the intention to have students from all faculties in residence. 12 successful established Alberta families will provide mentoring to each of the 12 forums. Undergraduate students from all faculties will be invited to attend the college. Selection will be based upon the recommendation of the respective deans and an interview by a selection committee. They would be chosen primarily based upon character and leadership potential. The students will be registered in their degree-granting faculty. Upon graduation, they will receive their degree, plus a Peter Lougheed Leadership Certificate. The students will pay normal tuition and accommodation fees. Students requiring financial assistance may apply for a bursary. The residence is designed around an outdoor or a central outdoor courtyard gathering place. The residence will include a dining hall to accommodate 300 people, a modest fitness center, a living room named after Jeannie Lougheed, which will have interactive live and video performances from the Banff Center. There will be no classrooms or auditoriums. And it could be expanded in the future, this so it can significantly increase the size if it's desired. On the top floor is a city view overlooking the Legislature Building and downtown Edmonton. This facility can be used by the college or other faculty leadership programs in various manners, including meeting, lectures, and social events. All faculties are encouraged to have a faculty leadership program. It's a leadership program designed by their faculty for their students. The college will provide direction, suggested programs, and a financial assistance if required to all faculties. Faculty leadership programs will be encouraged to develop mentoring relationships with community leaders, and the college will assist in that regard. As a guide to creating a faculty leadership program, we recommend the pilot project model in the School of Business, which is being successfully put in place. All students in the faculty leadership program will be invited to major lectures and speeches at the college, and these students will have access to the residence dining hall. The plan for the college is that it is endowed such that no funding now or in the future for capital or programs will come from the U of A's annual budget. It'll all be fully endowed. How does the Peter Lougheed Leadership Initiative become a reality? Well, the Institute at the Banff Center has had it approved by their Board of Governors and is now actively establishing programs and fundraising initiatives. The college at the U of A requires the approval, we believe, of all of, there's probably a number of other ones, but we're not sure of all the internal requirements, but it'll require the approval of General Faculty Council and the Board of Governors. And prior to receiving these approvals, it requires a detailed business plan with appropriate funding in place. And that is all being worked at this point in time, and will take some time to get that all in place. A few final remarks is that there are no leadership initiatives, colleges, or institutes like this anywhere in Canada, and we really can't find too many of anything like it anywhere in North America. We have an opportunity to make a difference in enhancing the leadership skills of our students here in Alberta, and through this process, enhancing the leadership skills of our future leaders. For the college, our near-term goal is to receive a commitment from 12 Mentoring Alberta families. And to date, we have 10 families with a commitment of putting up $1 million each. That's over $10 million now. Most of whom have never given significantly in support of the U of A. We believe this is a very unique and a very exciting opportunity. It's bold, but we're prepared and we've taken it on ourselves to see if we can make this all happen. So we certainly encourage all of your input and thoughts as we go forward. So we're open for any questions or comments.
All right. Thank you very much.
Just grab my note here.
And I will start a speakers list. Councilor Grokey.
You said that the residence is open to all faculties and they will graduate from their faculty. How would Augustana fit into this?
Augustana is the one that we do have the challenge relating to that. We've had the discussion with the dean at Augustana, but we're really promoting the aspect with Augustana that they have their faculty leadership program, and we're supportive of that. And any of their students, where they're on campus here, they'd be a part of it. But you've got a physical facility. You can't pick it up and have it partway. So it just doesn't work that well for Augustana. That's the one that stands out above anybody else. And we've had that discussion with the dean.
Thank you. Councillor Mohammed.
You guys mentioned that you went to the Royal Military College for inspiration on... You guys mentioned that you went to the Leadership College for inspiration of what leadership is. But in my in my knowledge, RMC is a military college that trains soldiers to go and fight wars. Is that the type of leadership that we want to have for U of A? And also, what is your type of what is your definition of leadership? And what is a leader to you?
He wants to go with the...
Okay, excuse me. I'm in denial for hearing aids, guys, so be patient with me, or else, and I am in denial. I absolutely refuse to get them, but I need them.
If I could turn this microphone up. The question was about the visit to Royal Military College. Oops, sorry.
So the question was, is military-style leadership the type of leadership that we want, and what is your definition of leadership?
Okay, let's start with the first question relating to it. We didn't go there for the aspect of wanting to create military leaders and building up leadership from a military point of view. But these are two institutions that are there that are really geared about developing leaders, whether that be for whatever it may be, they're really geared on that. So we said we don't want to miss that opportunity. So I'm going to use that as one example of what we talked to, who we've talked to. But we went down there to find out, how do they develop leaders? It's not necessarily to fighting units, but how do they develop leadership skills with their people? How do they do that? Which they did do, they brought in the various instructors they had, they had the students, and they talked about the different experiences they had. But we didn't go with the idea that, hey, here at the U of A, we want to build a whole bunch of military leaders, but we wanted to learn, how do they develop leadership skills in a military environment? So that's why we went there. Secondly, relating to how do you define leadership, people could define it in various ways, and I've defined it in different kinds of ways depending on the environment that I happen to be in. But it's how do you, it's a leader in my mind is someone that basically earns the right by those that want to have that person as the leader. It's not your leader because you are out front. It's because others want you to be there, and they inspire you to be there. And that often gets mixed up with a lot of people. People think you've got to be out front. You're the leader, and others will follow. In my judgment and my experience is that the key thing about developing leadership skills is you have to have people that want you there. It's not that you are the one, and people will basically push you into those positions. And so it's basically allowing others to share all of their skill sets. And I believe, like from a corporate point of view, which I've been involved, and at the university, is how you basically do a lot of that, is give everybody that opportunity to go out and build leaders with at the various levels as you go through an organization. I don't know if I'm answering your question, because I didn't specifically plan to how to answer that one.
I'm going to turn this volume down a little bit and hopefully
okay.
I'm hearing a little bit of feedback. That's for that. If need be, we might just get you to move a row forward if we're having trouble hearing you. Councillor Speakman?
Hi, thank you. Thanks a lot for coming to see us and talk to us this evening. My first question is about the size of the Leadership College, and you're speaking about your pilot project in the School of Business and how after the first year you had so many more applicants. So if you think that would maybe happen on a larger scale for this leadership initiative, could you say some comments about the sort of inherent exclusivity of this program and what will happen to the students who inevitably don't get chosen for the college, seeing as you have so many undergraduate students?
We arriving at the size is an important part. First of all, is that the 150 students came up to the aspect that seemed like it was big enough to have a critical mass, but it was small enough so you can develop relationships. As we got into this, we started trying to do a little bit of research into this particular aspect, and there was a professor at Oxford by the name of Dunbar. And he did a lot of research, and it was the belief that you cannot make a group work together effectively if you got more than 150 people together. And that's all kinds of research which he did. So there was no magic around that 150 outside. It was a gut feel to start with. And then when we did a little bit of this research, we came up with the idea we found out that it seemed like there had been research that 150 was the optimum number that you'd have to make a group really work together. So when we ended up looking at this, is that we said, 150, what if we broke it down into smaller groups? Because 150, they're still not getting to get to know each other very well. What if we went into smaller groups? And so because of the experience, as Bunny referred to, at the School of Business with 12 students, that worked extremely well. What if we broke it into groups of 12? That's kind of how it started. Then I was in an organization for several years. It was the Young President's Organization. The Young President's Organization has its various chapters throughout the world, but it's an organization here in Alberta and Saskatchewan. There's about 80 people in it, but it was too big, so they break it down into forums. That's where we got the idea of forums, where you get smaller groups of anywhere from 8 to 14 working together and how they learn from each other. And YPO is geared up to how to be a better president through education and idea exchange, some similarities to what we're talking about, and how those presidents, young presidents, that are all under 40 to start with, how they learn and how they learn from each other. So we said, well, let's make it in groups of 12. And it was just no big science other than that particular 12 times 12. So that's how we arrived at that. And then we said, well, the big part of it in a college like this is how do we get mentoring? Man, that's a real challenge. Because how do you get to provide mentoring? It's one thing to have, like Bunny and I said, as we did with the School of Business, you get people in there to speak to the students for, say, like the Rick Hansons or the Rick Georges for 3 hours or whatever. But how do you get the ongoing mentoring? So he said, you know, there's a lot of successful Alberta families. Why don't we get an Alberta families committed to being there as ongoing and it can become intergenerational? And this thing goes on over a period of time. So he said, well, how to get the families to do it? So Bunny and I said, well, it's also an idea we can do some fundraising. So it's kind of how this thing all evolved and came put together in that regard. So we ended up with the idea of 12 forums of 12. So, yes, and you could expand it. We could have made this bigger, but then it starts to get into the aspect of how diluted does it become in that way. Then we thought in terms of, okay, from a university as a whole point of view, why don't the success that we're having in the School of Business, why don't we have one of those particular leadership programs in every faculty? And we weren't too sure of how this would go over. You know, they had no idea. Like, we're just making this stuff up as we're going along, and we're thinking this thing through. So we bounced it off a couple of deans. And I particularly spent a better part of an afternoon with Dean Lynch in the engineering faculty and just tested this idea. He said, man, if we could have our own, because we've got to have it specially to our faculty, because our faculty's needs are a lot different than, say, the School of Business or the Faculty of Medicine and Dentistry and Education, whatever it may be. If we could do that, that could be very effective. And the idea then, it would still has to be down to small groups. Like we still, like we'd say, in this, like the first year in School of Business, 12 worked really well. This year we're going with 16. Now, is 16 going to be better than 12, or is 12 better than 16? We're finding this out. This is why it's a pilot project somewhat, too. But we have a strong belief that you can't have big groups. I mean, to develop these relationships, you need small numbers, and that's where we're coming from. That's how it's arrived at. But if you ended up, say 15 faculties participated. I don't know how many faculties may participate. And say each one of them had 30 students between the two years of the program, 50, you know, somewhere in that. You'd have 450 students plus the 144. You'd have close to 600 students participating in this if you had this all worked that way. Now, are you going to have that? I don't know. And if this takes off, can we expand it? Yes, we can expand it. But I don't want to make it too big. And then also, we don't want to dilute the quality. That's really important. We just do not want to dilute anything on the quality factor.
Thank you, Governor Kelly.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Thanks again very much for coming here and taking the time to present to us. I think I can speak on behalf of all students when I say we really appreciate the opportunity to give more direct feedback. Now, my question is sort of in the same vein as Councillor Muhammad. I'm concerned that the understanding of leadership and that the definition of leadership that the proposed institute is utilizing is one that will not appeal to or will not engage with a very large proportion of the student body. Because, for example, I took a look at the Banff Center website, the description of what the Peter Lougheed Institute is supposed to be. And on the website, in the description, it mentions entrepreneurial, economic development, corporate connections. But nowhere in the description does it mention social justice, poverty reduction, human rights, environmental protection, or anything like that. And now I'm not saying that we don't need business leaders. Certainly we do. But I'm really concerned that at this time, the Leadership Institute is much more focused on certain kinds of leadership. And again, I'm concerned that simply will not appeal to huge portions of the university community. So all that to say, what changes are going to be made to incorporate that reality, that leadership is not just about business or the military? And I'm not saying that's a good thing, but right now it seems that that's kind of the message that's being sent. And I really don't think that, for example, the next Nelson Mandela, would he see this organization as somewhere he could go to become a leader? That's, I think, something we should be thinking about. So I'd like to hear what your thoughts are on that.
It's an extremely good question, and buddy, I'll let you jump in here in a second, but I just want to comment, first of all, is that this is one of the reasons that we want to make sure this is completely interdisciplinary. I mean, that was first and foremost, and anything we do, and the business school is just used, this is the test model. We have to pick a faculty. There's no particular reason outside of that my experience involved in business, but the idea is it's definitely be interdisciplinary. No one faculty gets any special treatment over any other faculty. In fact, we had a big discussion one time when we had dinner with the dean of the Faculty of Medicine, who really wanted to make sure the Faculty of Medicine was not left out of it. We thought that they wouldn't even figure out how to fit in, but they were so excited about being a part of it all. Then when we met with the deans, this was kind of an interesting aspect along these lines, is that I shared my experience of where I think I probably, when I went to university and I took commerce, and I said, I'll tell you what I learned most, best course I ever took in developing any of my leadership skills was I wanted an easy option. I thought it was going to be an easy option. So I took a drama course. And I can tell you, I learned more in that drama course about giving myself self-confidence, being up on a stage, doing those kind of things. And it was interesting. Through then it got into the discussion that the dean of the Faculty of Arts, Leslie Cormack, and Leslie just said, well, so what are you kind of talking about? What are you developing in leadership? And the aspect is it's the social skills that you're really developing when we talk about it. We're not talking about in this developing leaders. What we're trying to do is enhance leadership skills. That's what it's really about, is enhancing your leadership skills no matter what field you end up going into. That's the driver of what we're talking about. So there's certainly no focus on business. There's no focus on military. Just used examples when Bunny said that.
Yeah.
We're going to learn. I mean, they do something quite well with those military colleges. We want to learn what they do.
I might qualify that too, because I use those two when I say John and I are most involved in the business, mainly because one of our sons took arts and then into business. The other one went somewhere else. John took business, but I never went to university. Okay? I'm a volunteer, and I have been in 7 faculties at the university. So I'm not into one university per se. And the military, and John, when I say his involvement in the military, believe me, he's an honorary colonel, which is the liaison between the community and the military. So I just want to clear that, okay? He isn't.
Oh, shucks. I thought they all. I ruined the whole image.
He still having it.
Councillor Hodgson.
Good questions. The questions there that we've struggled with. Let's go through it. All the points that you raised are not questions that we haven't faced and thought through and tried to think it through and try to arrive at what we call the best answer, because there's never a perfect answer, because what you do for one is not going to work so well for the other. But first of all, is the cost aspect. Is we made a commitment when we started this, there will be no student that's turned down because of financial reasons. We're going to raise enough money, and we're off to such a great start on this thing that there will. This thing is going. This project will be so well endowed. There's not ever an aspect of a problem. If a student has financial challenges, we will make sure that that's looked after. Take that as an absolute given. And the way we're going about it from a fundraising, I'm absolutely convinced we're going to be in great shape that way. And we've provided that in our budget process on it all. But there is the aspect we have to make a decision. We started off with the idea, well, okay, we'll have a college where some of the students will be able to live in and some will live out. Well, then we got talking to so many different people about it all. One of the great experiences of developing leadership skills of different places that I've talked to people about is that residential experience. It's just second to none. If you can have that in that kind of an environment. I talked to a few people that went to the Harvard leadership development programs, which is your advanced programs. And one of the great things they said about it, it's not from what we learn in the classroom, it's nothing like that, it's what we learn from each other. Like they get put into separate houses, there's 12 houses with about 12 people, kind of the same idea. And they learn so much from the others. It's the ongoing learning from each other. It's being in that residential experience. So he said, well, you know, we kind of really focus on that residential experience. But we have to make that commitment that the students will not be denied it because of financial reasons. So we're going to make sure that we raise enough money to make sure that is taken care of. You do run into it. We said, oh man, what about the married couples? Well, that is a problem. A person cannot have their wife or husband living in the residence. But that's one of the unfortunate dividers that comes into play there. So that is a reality. You can't have a married couple living in the residence. But we've had to cross that. We come to that decision. It may not be the nicest for a married couple, but hey, we have to make a decision on that part if we're going to have a complete residential experience. Now, did I miss any points along there?
Just on that, on the marriage aspect, one of the students in the first program got married last summer. So we have one married student in those 12 students, okay? So we asked him that question, too. How would you feel like coming into next year or moving into residence? Simple answer is I would make a choice that I want to improve myself, and that would be my commitment to me, to us, and to our situation, which was kind of a neat thing to get from a student that's actually in the program right now.
Just if I could just pick up a little bit on what Bunny said, is that actually with the students that are in the pilot project, the School of Business, is We did ask them, a lot of them, this question about of the residential experience, which they do not have. And they said, oh, man, if we could have that, that would be worth a lot. I mean, that would really be that much of a major enhancement to the whole program. We'd be so much in favor of that. I said, well, it's going to cost money. I said, well, we'd have to figure that out, but it would be a big plus. So we got it as a real add-on. We got that as sort of a substantiating it from the students.
And I think John, if I can add, said that the residence fees in the college would be not unlike you pay at Lister Hall or whatever, and the people at the university are figuring that out. We really don't know what you pay, but what was I going to say? I missed my thought. Go ahead.
Okay, well, we'll come back to that.
Okay.
Councillor Champagne.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you very much for this presentation. It's by far the most interesting one.
What's that? I missed it.
He said it's by far the most interesting one he's heard all year.
This has been a discussion topic amongst me and my friends for a very long time now, and I've come up with this sort of idea. You see, in this council, there are 32 voting members. There are 32 students who participate to student council and represent their faculty, and they are voting members. And each of their faculties, there are faculty associations who each have their own counselors and who each have their own vice presidents and presidents and treasurers and secretaries. And then I come to think that number is, just growing more and more. And then you think that there's 150 different student groups on campus, and then each of those groups has their own, president and counselors. And not saying that there's not any overlap, but there's definitely a lot of implication around U of A. And then I think of all the people that Peter Lougheed probably inspired while he was prime minister, and after the fact, even though he was a great leader for Alberta, and I'm sure he inspired I'm sure the amount of people he's inspired is considerable. And then I think, when you want to get some plumbing done in your house, you call a plumber. When you want a police officer to come, you call the police station, you call 911. So when I'm going to want a young leader to, participate in my program or participate in my initiative, I'm going to go to the Leadership College of the University of Alberta, because heck, that's, it's going to be something prestigious and something that's going to do a lot of good for, a lot of people, I'm sure. But then, are all the initiatives going to gravitate towards that one institution? Is that going to discourage people to emerge and take chances and become innovators? Because, they just don't make the cut. They just don't fit in that 150 students. And that number of 12, I couldn't agree with you more. That's a great number. Because classroom sizes, they should all be 12 students. You should all have small classes, and every student should have one-on-one time with their teachers. But then to only have 12 of those groups, I'm not so sure. In the French school system here in Alberta, there's a leadership course that is based off of seminars, and students from all the schools get to participate in these seminars, and that's accredited course by the Ministry of Education here in Alberta. And they're usually around groups of 12, and on the second seminar, they join up with another group of 12. And in the third seminar, they actually get to debate in the legislature here in the mock parliament and learn about, how our government works and everything like that. But, of all those people that participate, we get about 90 of them a year. So that makes already, 180. And that's just in the small francophone community here in Alberta. I can only imagine, if that initiative would be to be expanded, how many students it would cover. And then, I know we talk about, different faculty leadership programs. But then we start splitting it into classes. Who gets to have the better experience? We already agreed that a residence experience allows you to be closer to more people. I know that. I lived in Résidence Saint-Jean, and I know that the 100 people who lived there, they were very close, and they were the ones who participated the most on campus. But of the 100 people that lived there, there are 100 people and about 600 people faculty. So that's about one out of six that gets to have that experience. And then that one out of six can influence and participate more actively with those other five, because there's just five others to participate. But if we do 150 out of 30,000, I'm just wondering what your thoughts are, you know, hearing all this. Are we just being maybe a little bit too restricted? Are we maybe giving the initiative, concentrating our initiatives too much in one place? That's my question.
Well put together, relating to it all, and good examples of what to be concerned about. You know, we didn't just pick up this number relating to it all. It evolved over getting input along the way. One of the concerns that Bunny and I have had all the way along is that we knew that there's going to be some pushback as to, you know, how competitive it's going to be to get into these positions. And, you know, it is a competitive type of a world that we live in. And we said, well, the one thing that we don't want to do is dilute this whole thing down. Because, I mean, we could start opening this up and say you're going to have a third of your population, student population, into it all. But how do you do it? I mean, the question is, how do we do this? Because to develop these leadership skills and where we're coming at it, there's a lot of sort of individual mentoring that's involved into this, and the relationship that's built up. There's to build between the individuals. We don't know how. We didn't come up with any particular model. We looked at a model actually at Northern Michigan University, I think it is, where they have, I think they call it themselves, it's a two-tier type approach. They have a fellowship program where they get 50 students each year into it. Then they have it wide open for the rest of the university. And there's 9,000 students on the university campus there. It's not a big campus. And they said they had 2,700 students that participate. But it was interesting that when reading through all of the material, it didn't give you the very high regard that those 2,700 students were really picking up a lot of leadership skills along it. They were just part of something, but they weren't getting it. The whole focus and the emphasis was on these 50 students, which I think is wrong too. But because the way they put it up is it's open to everybody, but there's not that many that are really getting all the goods out of it. Your point is well taken. I mean, to get into university is a challenge. It's competitive and all of that. To get into graduate school is competitive and all of that. And to get into a leadership college is going to be competitive. Could we make it bigger than 150? Could we make it 300? Yes, we could make it 300. But we arrived, for the reasons we talked about it, how we arrived at 150. We could make it 3,000. But I can tell you one thing, it's not going to be near as effective at 3,000. Could it be just as effective at 300? Maybe. I'm not sure about that. It's just, all of those things, I don't know. We don't know that. But we've arrived at these numbers through just the process of which we shared with you.
When we heard a lot of feedback about this particular point, right on that day on the front of the Edmonton Journal were these little wee darling daughters and girls. I say that because I have three sons and I never did get a little girl. In her little tutu on the front, competing for, I think it was 13 spots or 15 spots to be in ballet, okay? And I cut that out and put it in front of John, and I said, you know, it starts right down there. there were only going to be 15 kids chosen for that, and yet they were all trying, and that's just an analogy.
But I'll just go back to the Peter Lougheed aspect of it all. Would Peter think this was the right thing to do? I absolutely believe he would. His sons say that their dad would be so proud of this, of what we're doing in that regard. Very supportive. Peter was the most highly competitive guy, or one of the most highly competitive guys I ever met. He loved the aspect it's got to be highly competitive. And in talking with Stephen Lougheed and Jean Lougheed, is the aspect that Peter would love this aspect of how competitive it's going to be to get into it. So, is 150 the right number? Again, it's just the number of how we arrived at it as we shared.
Councillor Mills.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you for coming to talk to us tonight. I have a question regarding other leadership initiatives that are going on campus. So, for example, study abroad, the community service learning, as well as just involvement through other student groups. Has there been any thought into incorporating programs that are currently existing into this new program, where somehow facilitating working together with those other programs on campus.
Academic Center. Yeah. Okay. No, we've been made aware of all these various programs, but we've really just come at this one strictly as a leadership program in itself, developing leadership skills in itself without how other programs can be incorporated. It's a problem. It's that we don't want to get unfocused. If you get tied up with all the different groups on campus, if we start to try to figure out how we can bring different things in, we'll get nowhere on it. So we're starting to try and make this as the ideal model to work from. And if we can incorporate it after it's set up, hey, I'm sure that everybody would be very supportive of that type of approach to it. But right now, we just can't try. We can't be everything to everybody, and we've kind of got to focus in on this right now.
But some of the deans who do have leadership programs going on in their faculties, and I'll use Leslie Cormack again in the arts, has quite an extensive one. She has shared all that with us, too, to see, you know, what can fit. And that's great. That's really good.
Councillor Bannister.
Hello. Thank you so much for the presentation. It's really wonderful that you took time to come speak to us. Not many donors or people that organize such large-scale initiatives like this take that time, so we really appreciate it. I was just wondering, if this initiative does go through, has any consideration been taken into making sure there is equality in representation in individuals who do get into the initiative? Do you think, will there be equal representation of international students to domestic students, or men to women, or other things like that? Has that been taken into consideration at all?
Good.
We come from the premise, may the best man win, may the best woman win, okay? It'll be up to the individual, okay, getting out to the faculties in general. It'll be students will come forward being represented or selected by their dean to have, as he or she sees the potential in what the student, you know, could contribute in this area or gain from. So we don't know yet. I can tell you one thing. The college is being built with dormitories such that, say, a handicapped person would be included. We don't know the men versus women at this stage. We don't know how many are going to be coming forward. But we have rooms that are single rooms and double rooms, you know, and like that to accommodate that. So it'll definitely be a juggling act when the time comes.
Yeah, but what Bunny's saying is absolutely, the whole design aspect of putting this together is to create maximum flexibility that we've done so that, I mean, if you have in one of the forums, of 12 forums, if there happen to be 10 women and 2 guys, we can handle that. If it's 6 and 6, we can handle that. We wanted to make sure that there was all of that flexibility. And in each one of the forums, and making sure there's at least one disability for room for facility for the handicap that's there as well. So we try to cover most of those kinds of things. Again, this is still, a lot of this is early stage. This is just conceptual design. These are conceptual drawings. And so we're kind of working these things up. One of the big factors at the end of the day is, what's this thing going to cost? I mean, we've got a preliminary pricing done on it, but at the end of the day, we want to make sure that the economics of this all holds together, too. But we're taking all of those things into consideration.
For sure.
Councillor Morris.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you for the presentation. So I have a couple of problems. My first being that the program sounds amazing. It sounds awesome. The building looks absolutely gorgeous, but it's for 0.4% of the population, right? And that building is going to be just for those 0.4%, because you said it's going to be a dormitory, no lecture theaters, dining room just for that building.
The dining room is going to be open. It's a big dining room for more than that, yeah.
But it's just a dining room.
Yeah, it's just a dining room.
Yeah.
And a lot of groups on campus right now are struggling with money. For example, just the other day I was talking to the manager of Aboriginal Student Services, and they were in the process of getting an Aboriginal gathering center, and it started in 2008, and it was going to cost maybe around $20 million, so that's about a fifth of what this leadership college is going to cost, and Aboriginals constitute about 2% of the U of A's population, a lot larger than 0.4%, and they've been waiting for, 5 years now? And it's just a little bit unfortunate that it's the program that you're talking about is kind of elitist and very focused on these individuals that will get to live on residence and won't affect campus on a much wider scale.
Well, maybe I just jump on the aspect is that at no time and at no way have we ever thought in terms of what you call elitism. I mean, is it competitive? It's going to be damn competitive. I mean, that's the idea behind it. Again, would 300 be make it better from the point of view of open more? Yes, it would. But 150 is better than 100 type of thing. So I was going through all of that aspect of it all. So it's we recognize that it's for, let's call it, a relatively small number. But that's if we're going to make this to what we want it to be of the quality, we don't know how to make the quality there by expanding the size. I mean, we'd certainly be open to all of that if we could increase the size and open it up to more students, but be able to do the kind of quality and the way we want to do it, the mentoring and so on, we'd be open for that discussion. We didn't make this 150 up. It's just that we kind of got through all this process of what would work best.
Vice President.
And there's no way as anything's intended to be elitist. Let's put it that way. That's not. There's nothing elite about anything about this.
Can I just respond to that? I just find that you're spending this big chunk of money on extremely good quality education for just these students.
Okay.
And I just feel like that's elitist.
Okay.
Vice President Woods.
I defer. Mm-hmm. Nobody did.
Pass. I'll just pass it. Okay.
Oh, actually, I'll defer to Councillor Muhammad. Yes.
Okay.
So, a few weeks ago, there was rumors about 12 mentors. And first, I was wondering how these 12 mentors would be selected. But you mentioned that it would be 12 successful Albertans who would each donate $1 million each. I took trouble in the term successful because that implies 12 people's success. I was wondering. I used to volunteer at the Mustard Seed, and there was a guy there named Blake. He's extremely poor, but he was a really good leader. And I would consider him more successful than the other 10 or 12 families. My question revolves around how this decision was made, not by students, but by wealthy donors, by Indira. And I'm just wondering, if this was put to a vote by referendum amongst the student body, would you accept that result if students voted against it?
We're not running the university. We're running this thing, and how that happens internally, you could have that discussion with the president or GFC, whoever else. We're just not in that.
Okay,
I mean, we're trying to help to come up with an idea that we think would be a great idea for the university. If the university doesn't want it, hey, it saves me a lot of money.
And
I mean, a whole lot of time. We just think this is something that we can really reposition this university in some way. But if the university doesn't want it, hey, it's we'll walk away from it.
So my question was about students. Like, students haven't went to the streets and called for a leadership college. So can you address how students weren't consulted? Were students even consulted? Undergrad students, average students about this leadership college?
You're asking me that question?
Yeah.
I can't tell you that. We consulted when we first met with 25 people. We had a couple of students amongst the group relating to all of that. But there was no. We weren't saying we're going to consult with students. We didn't say we're going to consult with professionals. We didn't say we're going to consult. We're just trying to get the idea of what would a leadership college look like? What do you think it would look like? And so we just had some students. We had a cross-section of age groups, different cultural backgrounds. So what do you think it would look like? And that's kind of how it evolved. There was no. Sit down and sit and bring different groups together. This is it. This is how it evolved.
Councillor Hansery, you had a point. No? Okay. Councillor Hansery, you're next on my list, actually.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. And thank you for coming in. And thank you all for your commitment and leadership, not only to the U of A for a very long time, but also to Edmonton. You guys this is just another initiative from both of you that clearly shows your commitment to Edmonton and the University of Alberta. I'm not going to get into what leadership is or who considers successful. Everyone has their own definition. It's your guys' money, and you guys can define it any way you want. And I agree with what you were talking about in terms of competitiveness. I've been in faculty of law. We are one of the hardest law schools out in Canada to get into. So I understand competition. Petros Kuzma, President Kuzma can know very well how competitive I am. But my concern is in the legal profession, in the faculty of law, and I think it's safe to say in the faculty of medicine as well, it's increasingly becoming a school of a faculty of upper middle class individuals, especially as we get into more holistic application processes, which the U of A is starting to integrate as well too a little bit. You know, someone who's working 40 hours a week, they just can't, or 20, 30 hours a week, who's just trying to make it by. They may have leadership skills. They may be great leaders, may be great human beings, but they just can't all have this time. And I understand, you know, what you're talking about, you know, there's going to be subsidies and all that. But even the residence concerns me a little bit. I live in graduate residence. I live in that area, and that's a huge area, East Campus Village area, where the university is expanding their residence. And that's kind of seems to be a targeted more expensive place and compared to the other residences. So, you know, I'm just, you know, concerned that we're just continuing that we would be, you know, in your planning of this, somehow it would be great to take note prevent this from just becoming another upper middle class area. Right? You know, when Peter Lougheed went to university, it was a lot more quality back then between the rich. The university was a lot more cheap. You know, you didn't necessarily need to work 40 hours. That's not the case anymore. And I saw it in my undergrad. You know, I had the luxury. I didn't have to work. So I could focus those 40 hours that other people were working on in my school. And you know what? I did. And that's why I was on Dean's list. And that's why, you know, I did have a full focus. But while somebody else didn't, you know, had to work 30, 40 hours, they just can't compete. And it's just, I hope you somehow, you know, take that into consideration and hopefully, you know, mitigate that somehow so we get a more diverse group of people and just not continuing to bring leaders within the upper middle class. And the other thing, on the side, I think our dean would love to meet with you. I'm sure you have, but I'm sure he would love to use your recruiting, your fundraising ability to recruit new people into the U of A. But the other concern is, I hope, you know, just when you're creating a competitive faculty, a competitive program, you know, you're going to segregate certain people. But I hope that there's an element into this program where, you know, a little bit more money is put on to maybe, you know, creating, promoting deans to create leadership initiatives in each faculty. Mm-hmm. And a significant amount, you know, because the U of A's motto is uplifting the whole people. And this somewhat contradicts it, and not to say this isn't a great initiative. So, you know, and I hope there's, you know, like you were saying earlier at Northern Michigan, you know, there's two different tiers. That would be something I hope you guys look at and maybe invest a little bit more money in a program where there's a larger program with more students, maybe a lecture series or something, or a workshop that's open to all. I know you mentioned that a little bit, but something where anyone can come in and anyone can do it. And maybe that's when, you know, that's how I got involved in leadership. I'm currently the chair of a leadership program, a Canadian law student working group. We're trying to create a national law student society. Every school's on board. I'm the chair of that. And the reason how I got involved in leadership was just randomly showing up. I walked in accidentally. I joined my friend to a leadership conference. Someone speaking about leadership, and that's part for me. So, you know, that would you know, be targeting those competitive people, but also allow someone that just not there yet, but has these leadership abilities,
and just lets it click. Those are really good comments, because I'll just to use our own examples that way, Bunny's and myself, is first of all is that back to, well, first of all, how this started is we had that dinner over at the president's house, and it was the aspect of where we came from, humble beginnings for both of us that way. Like Bunny grew up in Northeast Edmonton, which was about down there where the packing plants used to be down in that part. And I grew up on 95A Street and 17th Avenue, which was probably close to that kind of an environment. Buddy's father was a carpenter. My father was, he worked for the Evans transit system as a bus driver for 30 years. So we didn't come from that upper middle class. We're pretty basic people that way. And when we started, this whole idea is that the people that, a lot of people that became leaders in this province came from very humble backgrounds. And that was kind of how we started with this thing. So it's a reminder, is what you're saying as well. Maybe that you've got to be a little careful about where we're going with this from where we started. Because sometimes you start with the greatest intentions, but somehow through the process you can get a little bit redirected. So they're very good comments. Not that we're trying to talk about or bragging about where we came from and where we got to. It's just that that's the reality of this whole situation.
Let me just add my little comment that I can talk about is, my mother is still alive and well. She's 99 years of age, living in her own home. She's still very independent, living on her pension. And she just loves Peter Lougheed. You know, I mean, he has done so much for our province in her mind. So when it came time, I said what we were doing, talking to different Albertans to participate in this, she gave me two things to do. One was to buy a light for the high-level bridge to light up for $25, and she gave me $25 for the Peter Lougheed Leadership Initiative. That's my reminder, exactly what you're saying, to always come back to basics. So I just thought I would add that.
Great. Before I go to the next speaker, I'm just watching. We are over an hour into the presentation, and the participants have been very gracious with their time, and I think we've got a little bit more time, but I would encourage you to have as succinct questions as possible, just so that we're ensuring that we're getting through all the speakers properly and that we have time to get to everyone.
Can I make just one comment, just in response to one of the questions this lady here asked earlier, and I didn't cover that, was the aspect, is that one of the important things that the students coming in to the college, well, they're all, first of all, they go through the process. They've got to be recommended by the dean of that particular faculty. And at the same time, then it's going to go through a selection process, a committee. And that committee is going to be really important that they balance this out. There's a lot of balancing. We want to make sure that there's a crop, make sure faculties are all represented. You have to call it age groups. They have all these factors come into it. They want to make sure that we really get the right kinds of mixtures in this, because you're not going to learn a lot if they're all from one faculty or certain types of like people. You like to get the aspect of international students, and you want to do all of that. But that's going to be chosen. That's going to be determined by that selection committee. Now, how that selection committee is determined and who's going to be on it, I have no idea. But that's the theory behind what we're coming from. Okay.
Councillor Patel.
I just have maybe a rhetorical question. Thanks to Google and you being here today, I feel like I've gotten some insight into how big a role model both of you are and great leaders for Edmonton and the University of Alberta. So I'm wondering, how many leadership colleges did it take for you to become the leaders that you are today?
School of hard knocks. I think a lot of it with both of us is that, and that's why we emphasize this aspect of mentoring. I mean, I feel I was so fortunate to have some incredibly good mentors all the way through, from the time I was in university through all of that. And it was having those people that I looked up to that kind of held my hand along the way in a lot of ways. It's how you developed to where you became, to what you became. And that was a huge factor that came into place. Another one that... Bunny's heard me say it, sometimes she gets upset when I say it, because I said this started out when I was a younger person, probably the age of you, but even younger. I created my own little theory, and it's kind of like about how do you develop leaders. I used to say, you hang out with winners and you've got a better chance of being a winner. Same thing, if you hang out with leaders or leadership potentials, you've got a better chance of being it. So I've had that as a theory as I've gone through everything, is making sure I kind of hung out with those types. Now back to, what are those leaders? It was really, as this gentleman said over here, it wasn't necessarily, it wasn't anything to do with money. It's just people who happen to think that we're good quality people to hang out with. That was how things, how personally I developed.
I did it differently. I didn't hang out. Okay. But because I never had a university education, that's been a big thing on my shoulders for many, many years. Until I had three kids, three and under, and got them on their way, I started volunteering back then. But I always volunteered with something that I really felt very passionate about. It's the only way I would do something like that. So I took it upon myself to watch leaders, say in politics or on TV, good speakers, and I've watched a lot for many years. Because when we were out at different functions, I was the only one, believe me, that didn't have a university education. Okay, that I really had to swallow big time. Until I got the confidence in myself, and I did that by watching others.
Sure.
So I guess what I was trying to get to is, why do we need a college then? Why can't we stick to the basics and all the mentors that we have at the UVA, why can't we utilize them better instead of having a college just for these select members?
The world has changed. We have to upgrade in a lot of ways, and I think if we can just offer that enhancement to become even a better person, like if take me back to your age, I'd be in there in no time to learn more for myself. And,
I would be too, but I won't be accepted.
Okay, I'm gonna. There's a bit. I don't want to go too much back and forth, just because there is quite a few folks on the list. So, and just a note to you folks: whenever you need to take off, just let me know, because
pizza's good when
you guys will all have pizza. We're starving.
I'm going to really, really encourage succinct questions here. Again, we're very gracious of Ferguson's time, and I want to make sure we can get through as many folks as we can before they have to take off. Councillor Nguyen. Okay, President Kuzma.
First of all, I just want to say once more again, thank you so much for coming up for the council. I think originally council was also expecting to have some presence from the president's office as well to be here tonight, but it's really great that you can field all these awesome questions. And I think there's a perception that us as exec are really tough, but it's actually our counselors who are the really tough ones. But yeah, it means a lot that you folks can come out. Now, I guess I'll just be providing some brief commentary from my experience. So now I sit on the leadership academic coordinating committee for the college here at the U of A, and where, you know, it's myself, a couple other deans, some other academic staff, one of the folks who was involved in actually the business leadership certificate program. And we're all talking about this, and I think one of the underlying frustrations I've seen from students and academic staff is it's a challenge, especially in an institution of higher learning, it's a challenge to get buy-in for a project. And I think it's one of the questions everyone's wondering is, what feedback is wanted, essentially? I think there's a confusion, at least with some of the stakeholders, of how much, you know, how much of it is a done deal, and how much of it do we actually have a chance to shape some of the actual leadership program itself. For instance, I think you saw some of the questions as to why is it a residence, or is that okay? And one of the questions I have is, what feedback are you really looking to get from the students on the actual entire initiative? And personally speaking, like, Lockheed, I think for a majority of us here, is an idol for us. I have a picture of him when he was student union president in 1951 on a Gateway cover, and I framed it for Lindsay as a gift, actually. And, so, you know, when we heard the idea of having a leadership initiative, we were pretty stoked because, A, we like leadership initiatives here. We're all kind of involved in one. And, B, Lockheed is an excellent example on campus. The question that everyone kind of, where it kind of starts breaking down is, you know, how do we implement this leadership initiative on campus? What does it look like? And what kind of feedback are you looking for? Especially if it's not going to have any funding from tuition or operating grants from the provincial government from our annual budget. You know, what are you folks looking for exactly?
Your ideas, too.
Just what
just
we're hearing
what
tonight.
We're doing tonight. Okay. That's exactly. Simply put.
Is there anything that's... is there anything that's pretty concrete that you know you for sure want? Because it sounds like the residence is a for sure thing. It sounds like the 144 membership is is a thing that you want for sure, but beyond that scope, is there much opportunity or flexibility for input for students and other stakeholders as well?
Well, I'm going to be open with you a little bit, is that maybe we're going a little further than what we should on this aspect of it all. But Bonnie and I have been working on this idea, trying to put this all together. We didn't realize that this hadn't been worked up internally within the university environment. Okay, so what we're finding out is that we didn't realize that you students were not 100% behind it and where it was going. We didn't know that you didn't know. Okay, and it's only been this last while we started to get this idea. Particularly, there's this Gateway article that a friend of mine pointed out to me. He says, well, how are you responding to that? Geez, I didn't even know that existed. And so it was all of that. It's when that, you know, you guys made a lot of noise that we started to say, well, I didn't know that they didn't know.
Yeah.
Okay? And now we're saying, well, we thought that that was happening internally within the university community. So we've been caught a little bit off guard on that, and I'm just sharing that with you because you should know that. And to the same extent, we met, a couple of weeks ago with the deans. Again, it was amazing how when we met with the deans, how when they heard the whole story, how they had a much more positive attitude about it all as well. I mean, is it perfect? Are we open for ideas? We said this is where the concept is evolving. Yeah? And it's evolved to where it is just by what's happened along the way and by talking to a lot of people. We certainly didn't know that you students had not had any input along the way. It's okay. Now we're at this particular stage. Are we flexible on that? We're totally flexible on that. There's nothing locked in any way whatsoever. We just want to make sure that if we're doing this, it's going to be the right thing to do. One thing I'm not ever going to do, we're not going to be supportive of anything where it gets watered down. It's got to be of the highest quality. That doesn't mean it's got to be limited to 144 students there and another X number that are going to be in the leadership programs in the various faculties. But we're not going to allow this program to get watered down, and we're just not going to be a part of it.
And I think that's fair. I just, again, from my feedback on being on the committees with others, academic staff, I think what everyone's kind of seeking for is a sense of flexibility. Because we're told, like, you know, these building plans need to get approved something like January so we can get building on this quick. I don't know what the timelines are, like, on your end at least. But there's a sense that it's being really rushed. But I, you know, if there are some underlying principles on your end, I think that's really flexible to work with, to get the others to buy in. If you're saying you want high quality, you want to make sure that this isn't done, and I think that's a lot more workable than at least what we're hearing on the other end of things. So we have to get this done quick. This is what it's going to be.
That's interesting. I can assure you, from our point of view, there's no tight time frames in any way whatsoever. We would love to, if we're going to build the college, we're going to build the facility, we'd love to have it open for the fall of 2016. But if we can't make it because, hey, it's not the right thing to do and we go through the process, hey, what's the problem with delaying it a year? That's not a big deal. But you've got to have, you know, when you're going through this, you want to have some tight schedule as you go through it because time costs money as you get through, go into these things. So, we'd love to be able to have the facility, if it goes ahead as we're talked about, as we conceptualize so far, we'd love to have it open in the fall of 2016. To do that, we need to keep the ball rolling because we'd have to be in the ground by, call it, the fall of 2014.
John's a developer, so of high rise, so he knows that business, so he's very much on top of it.
But I think taking back that message to the other folks on the committee and academic staff, I think that would ease a lot of tension.
Yeah, there's nothing locked in from our vantage point, and we don't make the decisions for the university. We're the volunteers. Okay, we're the ones. In fact, we're worse than volunteers. We're putting up money. But the aspect is that it's not going to go ahead with our support unless it's absolutely, in our mind, the right thing to do. And then the input we've got tonight has been good all around. And I mean, I've heard this comment about elitism, and I'm concerned about that. I mean, from where Bunny and I came from to where we are, this really bothers us a lot. And we definitely don't want to have that stigma attached to this, or we're not going to be there. We've got to take that out of this equation somehow.
I even had one of the leadership students in the School of Business meet me for a coffee because that word elitism bothers them as a class so much. How can we help, they said. And so you know it's not part of the whole picture.
All I just say is that we listen to everything you've got to say. Yeah. We appreciate what you have to say. Give us the input all the way along. But keep in mind, one thing that we're not going to do, we're not going to dilute the quality. But we want to keep the quality up. Okay, but if we can do it with more students in a different way, we're all for it. But we've got to make sure we don't dilute the quality.
Point of information.
Pardon?
To Petros. I'm just wondering, like you mentioned the point of no return. Like, at what point does this project become finalized? And they mentioned April of 2014, but like, governance, when does it get to? There's no.
I'm not entirely sure. I was hoping we could have some folks from.
Well, I could just tell you one thing on that aspect. Before it can go anywhere, we need to have a business plan put together. And it's not going to that business plan is not going to get put together without our input. So just to assure you that and we're going to be a big part of putting that business plan together. So nothing's going to happen until then, whenever that is. And we're a long ways away from that.
Folks, we've got 7 people still on my speakers list. It's 7:35. I'm cutting this off at 8. So we may not get to everybody, but we need to at some point wind this down. So again, encouraging succinct questions. Councillor Lamb.
I'm okay. My question is very similar to my question.
Okay. Thank you, Vice President Lay. Yeah,
thank you, Mr. Speaker. Thank you once again for coming. And I mean this with the utmost respect, but. So I guess for the whole council, and there's a bit of a personal story to it as well, but I applied to the leadership certificate in the business program during the first year of the program, and you were there at my entry, that's where I met you for the first time. And I clearly recall my academic performance to be being a doubting how, and it may have affected the interview, but the rest of it went well. So, yes. I'm obviously not in the program, and I don't mean this in a bad way, but as a reject who would dilute the program, I've watched closely from the outside at the first cohort, and I'm impressed, but I'm also perplexed at all the opportunities that they've been given, all the leaders they've been exposed to, while myself and other business students have sat in the dark. And, I haven't seen or felt any benefit from this first or the second leadership cohort. And I eagerly wait, and I realize leadership has a long-term impact, and it's not all immediate. But how do you prevent this sentiment amongst other rejects like me and people who will be rejected from the program? And how do you define character and leadership potential when you and the panel, side-eye did not, when the rest of the undergraduate population determined that I'm fit for this role.
Well, I'm not going to comment about your specific situation because I a little bit as I can't. It's personal on that aspect. I won't even go there. But the aspect is that it's like everything in life as you go through it, is that there's going to be, let's call it, some people are going to make it and some people are not. You made it into university. A lot of your cohorts didn't get to go to university because they just didn't make the grade. Everything is competitive in this world we live in. And it is competitive. Some are going to be in and some are going to be out. Yes, and we're very proud that those students that got into the program, they did get that particular special experience of being with a lot of very influential people, quality people like the Rick Hansons of the world and that. Yeah, they did. And we're hopeful that next year there's going to be more people that really want to get into the program. It's going to even be more desire to get into. It's more competitive to get into. Can we let more in? Of course we can let more in. That's easy to do. That's the easy way out. But is the quality going to be there? That's a question. Like, we went from 12 students in the pilot project last year. We went to 16 this year. We're trying to take a look at this. Is it going to be as good with 16 as it was with 12? Well, I don't know. We're going to find out some of that. Will it be better with 25? Will it be better with 50? I don't know. I don't think so. In fact, I just strongly believe it won't. But I don't pretend to be an expert in that particular area, except I do have a lot of experience of dealing with a lot of people in different groups. So life is just competitive that way. And there's going to be some that get in and some that don't get in. And, Sure, we'd love to have it for everybody that's in the undergraduate program throughout the whole university that gets exposed to this. That'd be ideal, but it's just not practical, and it's just you're going to dilute this down to where it's nothing.
One reason why the dining room in the proposed concept is larger is we will be having, somebody mentioned about lectures or summits of that sort going on in the year, and exchange with the Banff Center. So believe me, once this whole initiative grabs hold in the world, and I'll say that, not just Alberta, Canada, but it's going to be global, okay? It's going to attract a lot of very, very significant people coming through. And believe me, if we were so, if we were privileged enough to get a star in the world, this university would open that up to all. And so those things are things that we hope will happen with this college. It'll make a University of Alberta much, much better.
Councillor Speakman?
My question, though I have more philosophical ones, I'm going to bench those, and I have a very logistical question. I'd really love to know more about the 10 families of Alberta that have already committed $1 million to this project, who they are, and what it means to them to be investing in this, and also how they are going to provide or select a mentor. Would that be from someone literally in their family, or do they just pay to have some mentor be in the project?
Okay, it started from my list, and it's that long. Okay, because we wanted to get people who have contributed to Alberta, who are connected to Alberta, possibly connected to Peter Lougheed, in areas that we felt would be acceptable to what the concept is. As I mentioned, both John and I are born and raised Albertans, Edmontonians, but we really do know our province as well. And as far as, not unlike what Peter Lougheed did in politics, he reached out to all Albertans. And this is what we're doing. We have donors from Edmonton, from Calgary, from Red Deer, Sherwood Park, and St. Albert as of now. Okay? So we have reached out, and we've only... we've gone to people that we knew at this time, because $1 million is not something that people can just roll over in a minute. We haven't even gone to anybody except my mother, who came to me, to the masses, okay? But interestingly enough, last night, we had a friend, we climbed Kilimanjaro together, and we had a friend on our climb that phoned us and wanted to take us out for a chat. Well, he has come to us because he wants to be part of this. So this is what's going to happen, okay? And we haven't even got there yet. So how did we pick the people to be the $1 million ones who believe in the concept? I've been labeled a fundraiser in my life. I hate that word. I am not a fundraiser, but I love bringing people together. To make it fit, like the Royal Alec Hospital for the Killy Climb, you make it fit for somebody who wants to donate in a certain surgery or whatever. So this is how it all started.
We big part of what money is getting in as well is this is when this is just for these 12 spots.
Yeah.
We want to open this up from a fundraising to all Albertans. That's going to be a big part of it all. There's going to be lots of opportunities for everybody in the province to participate. But to kickstart this, we need money.
Yeah.
You know, we need a fair chunk of dough in there. So we came up with the idea of getting Alberta families that got money. Okay? And I know money's not the key to success or isn't a big jug, but it is to make this thing work. You need money. So we said, hey, listen, we want your money. But here's what also we want you to do. And it's amazing how they all kind of... And it's not that you're going to do it, but you're responsible for going out and finding mentors. It's not that you, Joe Blow, are going to be the mentor, but you take on that responsibility for that forum, that you're going to make sure that that forum is basically looked after from a mentorship point of view.
We can't have any names of families.
the names of families, that would, we, would that's yeah, just we, not appropriate for us
we
to
haven't
say that.
Disclosed
I'll,
that.
Oh, no, we'll name one.
Us. We haven't disclosed that even amongst the donors.
Yeah. The donors don't know who others no. are. In fact, there's outside of the president, I don't think people on campus know who it is.
No.
Councillor Hodgson?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is relating to how the Leadership College will essentially benefit the rest of the campus. Like has been previously mentioned, there are a number of leadership initiatives already happening on campus, and a lot of these are underfunded. CSL or community service learning. One example I've heard, I've never participated in it just because of science. I'm a science student and doesn't necessarily orient itself the greatest to science students. But I've heard they're running out of funding in the next 1 to 2 years, and it's a really great program for students and other faculty as they go into the community and do a project to actually. Hands-on community facilitated learning. So I was wondering what the plan, if there is a plan or if there's been thoughts around how the Leadership College will trickle down to the rest of the campus, how this will work, how will like, these super leaders, I guess, that are at this college benefit the rest of the leaders that are on campus?
I think we've addressed that. Well, getting on to all the faculty.
Yeah, well, the only way we're doing that at this point in time is the faculty leadership programs, and it's strictly going to be driven by the faculties and how the faculties want to do. We're not getting into the various clubs and different organizations. We are not going there. I mean, otherwise we're starting to getting so many things into the jar. I'll tell you, we haven't even talked about the Banff Center and how that all fits. I'll tell you, that's as complex as can be. That threw a whole other dimension into the whole thing, but it creates an opportunity to do something that really is could be internationally recognized. So we're not going there of how it trickles down throughout the rest of the university. We believe that if we do this all right, that the faculty support the leadership programs that we talked about, that we believe it will have a huge cultural effect that we'll be able to do that. I mean, university is another place because of my involvement over the years. You give the university all the money in the world and it still wouldn't have enough money for all of them. That's just the way it works. There's just all these things that are going on, and they're all good things in the university. But it's just, we're not going to try and be everything to everybody. We're just working on this specific aspect.
Councillor Bannister?
Hello again. So I think it's really wonderful you came and talked to us, but that being said, we are only roughly 20 students out of roughly 30,000. So we are a good representation, but we're not a great one. So as all of the counselors will inevitably bring this information you have given to us and relay it back to our constituents and gauge their feedback, I was just wondering what would be the best way for you, for us to send you the feedback which we get. Because I think I was very disappointed to hear that there was a lack of communication between you and the university, and you were unaware of the student issues that were in concern to this initiative. So I just really want to have a good understanding of the best way we can support you and letting you guys know what the students think about this.
Be frank about it. We don't know how you can do that best. You'd know better about that than we would know.
How would you suggest?
Yeah.
What is the best way to contact you?
I think it's all on your iPad there. Just Google Bunny Ferguson.
No. We don't want it to come to us directly.
No.
I don't want that to happen.
Take it back.
Okay.
Maybe so you guys
don't
get 50, 60 students responding. Maybe if we direct our emails to one.
I would encourage that. I would encourage directing your comments to President Kuzmu, and President Kuzmu may find a way of best facilitating how that...
That's leadership.
That's leadership.
I'd like to defer to
Councillor Speakman. Well, you've already asked your question, but is there some related point?
Yeah. I was thinking, since you totally told us that the inspiration, the impetus for this came from a dinner you had with the president in Gira Samarasekara, maybe you could, in continuing communication with her, encourage her to get more student positions on the steering committees as we go forward. That'd be great.
Councillor Hanstra.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. So I think we talked extensively about issues. I just want to talk more specifically about
the selection process. I'm now defining leadership in a certain way, and so take this consultation. I just hope that my issue is actually to preface it. It actually would reduce my chance back in undergrad of participating in this program. As I'm concerned, I hope that academic marks isn't a big factor. It is a factor, but not completely. And the reason is, I might be offending somebody here, likely them. There is a thing back in undergrad, especially in science, that's my undergrad, there's a thing that's known as the OSA effect. And that is, there's old school in the academic. You have to have high marks to get it, and they're very ambitious, and they seek to try to monopolize certain things that make their resumes look good. Now, I deal with old school in academic students, and they're overrepresented in med school and law school. Now, I deal with them, and they're based in law school. But the fact of the matter is, when law firms are hiring old school academics, and these guys did all these jobs, and they hire about 10 students first year, 10 students second year. And what they know, in the years above me, the 2 years, and the years are likely before me, they very rarely get those jobs. Because when law firms are hiring those 10 students, those corporate law firms, right, 10 students the first year, then another 10 students the second year, they're looking for leadership skills and networks. And I think that's something maybe that you guys are looking at too. So someone like, even Josh, this guy is one of the most famous guys on campus. No one, if he ran for SU president, no one would run against him. He was a president last year. That's a 2.0 GPA. Public announces this, but he runs the business school. He is a legend in business school. Someone like Michael Janssen, I'm aging myself, but I don't know.
Counselor, answer if you maybe just want to wrap it up, just because we're getting tight on time.
Sorry. So what I'm saying is, I feel that academic marks sometimes excludes a lot of people and excludes a lot of leaders. So I hope
by
it's a more holistic approach.
Well, I hopefully we put a point across is that the aspect to get in is driven strictly, as we said, it's not by marks. It's driven by character and leadership potential. Now, how do you define each one of those is another issue, but I look at the aspect of character. I mean, I look at people that's got resilience. I look at the aspect of they got grit, usually of how they come out of some situations. This is not driven by marks. There's so many things. I figure that Bunny and I have talked about the aspect that any student that's already got to university and has spent 2 years on campus has probably got to be smart enough to do a lot of good things. And if you take a look at the top leaders, Peter Lougheed, for example, was a long ways from the top of his class. But when he became the leader of the Conservative Party, he went out and hired a lot of the smartest guys in this class, like Merv Leach, who got the gold medal. He hired a lot of those people around, but he was a great leader. But Peter would never have got anywhere near the top of his class. It's the same idea, I think, what you're talking about. That's what we're trying to instill here.
Counselor Grokey?
Hi, thank you for coming on again. I just want to, the idea about having a residence where people have to live together, coming from Augustana, where it's mandatory you live in residence, I completely agree. The relationships you build there are foundation for the rest of your academic career. I'm not going to dwell too much on Augustana, but one of the problems that we have being a almost completely residential campus is you could ask any Augustana students a question about North Campus, and they probably won't be able to answer it. And if you ask any North Campus student who's not in this room what Augustana is, there's this. So when you take these 144 students out of their lives and plunk them into this residence, you're isolating them from the first 2 years of their, from what they were used to in their first 2 years of academia, and you're putting them, saying, these are the 12 people you're going to live with, these are your mentors, this is your new life. Have you ever, and there are good things about being in a residence, but have you ever thought about the problems with isolating these 144 leaders from the rest of campus?
Well, first of all, we're not plunking anybody anywhere, okay? But I did actually talk to a couple of the students already in the leadership certificate program. And they said after, because I said, how would you feel, if you were living there? Well, by third year of university, one of them said I'd be ready to move out of home and be on my own. And And they weren't adverse to living together, because that's what your world and our world have been. You're going to live with new people all the time. It could be your career, where you have this person here today and that one tomorrow, and next week they're gone and somebody else. So we have to, those are part of the leadership, part of the development that will be part of this.
Last question, Councillor Champagne, and we're not going a minute past eight, so you better be quick.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just one last question. My last question is, if you have the specific criteria and specific standards for admission in this college, then would competitivity and would limitations be an issue?
Sorry, you got to say that again. I didn't really pick it up.
If you have
but that Moncton jersey kind of bothers me a little bit.
Sorry, it was my father's. Anyways, if you have specific standards and criterias, and you know, you were saying about, you know, character for the candidates, if you have all that in consideration for admission, would competitivity and would, like, a restrictive amount of people be an issue? If you have, you know, if everybody's at the same standard, if they meet certain requirements and meet certain criteria.
Yeah. No, no. But we got to be able to accommodate. And I'm absolutely right. But you got to figure out how the programs will work, too, because it's all driven around the programs. If we can make all of the programs, there should be no restriction. I agree totally with that. Totally.
Okay, with that, we are going to wrap it up. I want to thank John and Bunny Ferguson for joining us, and please do help yourself with some deep stuff on the way over. Thank you. Okay, folks, we are going to move back to the rest of our agenda package here. Before we jump into anything else, though, what I'm going to do now is move over to Council Scholarship. Reason being, then while we're doing question period and so on, I can tabulate ballots and so on. So, are there any members of council to show of hands if you don't have a nomination form or a set of nomination forms? And what I'll do is I'll facilitate grabbing those. Okay, Councillor Marsden? Okay, motion for a 5-minute recess, seconded by Councillor Grilke. All those in favor? Don't tell how to vote. All those opposed. Okay, the motion's carried. We'll adjourn until 8:02. And again, if you haven't done so already, I will take care of it.
You're not rejected in our
Cool, I felt bad at that point. I realized, I can't even stand for 2 hours.
Okay, I apologize, Craig. I will never do that again. Well, maybe I will, but I'll give you more advanced
notes. Oh, I better mount this order.
Okay. I also have a final score, which is like zero.
Okay, okay, there you go. So you're
oh no, judgment comes in.
Counselors.
Oh, nothing. I was just making
random chance. There's my gavel. Okay, we're calling back to order. At 8:05. Does anybody need additional time reviewing the council scholarship nomination forms? Folks, I'm calling back to order.
Call to order.
Thank you, Councillor Speakman. Now I know you are. I thought you had some sort of readjournment protest or something going on there, but now I know where you are. Okay. If anybody needs more time to read through these, rise on a point of privilege right now. If not, I am going to distribute our lovely ballots. Just a reminder again that these are confidential, so I'll need to get them back. So if you wouldn't mind just bringing them back with you as you bring back your ballots.
Do we put our top two choices?
You can actually rank as many as you want. So there it's a preferential ballot. Oh, yes, sorry, I should clarify. You can only win one each turn, so technically, regardless of how many times you're nominated, your name is only going to appear under once. And you can win in multiple terms, but you can't win both in a single turn sort of thing. So
there's three candidates?
So there are four candidates.
Who are the four? Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
They should all be there.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. This is for the fall semester. This is for the
and then we have another one in the
do another one in April, yeah. I don't have any spare pens, I don't think, so just borrow your neighbors, maybe. And if you have any questions about how the ballot works. I'll have to check. Thank you. That was that. Thank you. Councillor Bannister, are you being too helpful?
Oh, I should have nominated myself. Now did
there isn't a scholarship on helpfulness with scholarship.
I appreciate your analogy. Sam Keach, you had 2.0.
Thanks. And here you go.
Are there any outstanding ballots still? Do I have all of the ballots? Do I have all of the forms back?
Oh, yeah.
Are there any outstanding forms?
I have a couple of just speaker votes.
Vice President Blay, did you vote already?
Maybe I've said this before, but this looks like a Lord of the Rings logo. It's like JRR, right? Tolkien?
But it's RRO. Okay, going once, going twice for ballots. Okay, if not... All right, I'll figure that out during question period, but in the interest of time, we're going to keep going into executive committee reports. Are there any executives wishing to have a report? Is that a hand up? Yeah. President Kuzma.
Yeah, thanks. So I did not submit, nor the majority of the executives submitted an exec report, just because we literally had council last week. And so yeah, but kudos, we'll start to Adam for submitting a report. With that being said, I just wanted to give you a brief update on the international students' tuition fees. I've met with nearly every single board member, and I feel like a lot of them are very receptive to the idea of at least relooking the university's proposal for a tuition increase. I had a meeting with the board chair, kind of last minute. He brought in Mark Rixon-Pell, the acting provost, and the university's finance and administration, and they said, hey, like, we're trying to make sure that you at least be somewhat happy. We understand that you're not going to be happy with the tuition increase, but we're hoping we can at least increase the bursaries that we have for international undergraduate students by, let's say, $100,000, and perhaps we can talk about, you know, ways to rearrange international student services so it's more effective, and we can do this, and perhaps a steering committee. I took back that feedback to some of the international students who myself, a couple of other execs and counselors were volunteering with that night, and a lot of them were still displeased with that compromise, so I'd like to hear your thoughts on that. But with that being said, I'm still meeting with them. It seems like things are going okay, and we're still looking for as many students as possible to show up early Friday morning. So if you can bring your friends, come along. I think Josh will be posting a video later that's a call for action. That will be pretty neat, so if you can spread the word.
Thank you. Any other board and committee reports? Executive reports? No. Any board and committee reports? No board and committee reports. Okay, we will move into question period. And I believe there is a written question on the late ads. Yes, item 5A. President Kuzmu, any response?
Yeah. So since this was on the late editions, I didn't get the chance to submit a written question to the question yet. But with that being said, in regards to club security, it's something that we're always bringing up in the different residents' committees that we do sit on, Resident Budgetary Advisory Committee and the Resident Advisory Committee of the University. A lot of the pushback that we keep getting is there's this perception that, A, would it be effective because people can just simply leave the doors open. I should probably backtrack just to make sure everyone understands the issue. A lot of residents in Hub Mall have been raising the issue that the 80 stairwells that exist in Hub aren't locked. It's open 24/7. And a lot of them say, you know, other apartments, buildings, and et cetera, around the city that exist, it's common practice to lock an apartment building so you don't have open access to it at all times. And there is fears that people don't feel comfortable living in Hub sometimes because the stairwell can be accessed by anyone. There's been instances of various crimes taking place there. So what the students have been proposing for a while now is lock all the stairwells and perhaps leave a couple open to key access so students who don't live in Hub Mall would at least have access to Hub. But this has been a conversation with the university for a number of years. The institution pushes back saying, well, people will just leave the doors open. It's not like it's going to make a difference. So what they did instead was invest, I think it must be more, I had the number a few hundred thousand in my head. I'm not entirely sure if that's right. But they invested a lot of funds to change the locks on the doors in the Hub, different Hub rooms. So if you leave your door, it automatically locks. And they say, well, a lot of the times it's
you know, the different Hubbards, and it's forgetting to lock their own doors, and their roommates are pissed off, saying, hey, you didn't lock your door, our door. So that's how they're spending the money. Instead of actually locking the doors, they say it'll cost too much money to lock the individual stairwell doors because the way it's constructed, having a key card access would cost $3 million if you had it at all the entrances. We propose the idea of at least having on two entrances, maybe locking everything else. They say it's still too expensive. So we're still in talks with the university. But what's really interesting about this is with the consultation meetings that we're having with the university on developing a consultation guideline and process, the thing that the case study that we're going to go through is actually talking about the hub security residence issue. So we're hoping that this can kind of be a clean slate for us to re-engage in conversations with the university about this issue in a better process. So
it's quite a good information.
Yeah.
So I've had a number of students ask how they can get involved, like actively on this issue, advocating for the university.
Yeah.
So how can average students help you?
Yeah, no, that's good. And thanks for passing all that information to us as student council and asking the question. I think in terms of how the average student can get engaged, primarily two ways. If they're super passionate about this, they want to do something, I'd recommend that they email me so I can give them further information on how to get involved, or at least William. The other aspect is to get involved in the Residence Hall Association and make sure that this is continuously an issue. And the other aspect would be also email the university administration, especially the folks in the facilities and operations side of the administration. So, yeah, thanks a lot.
Thank you. Councillor Hanstra.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Now, this question is directed to President Kuzma. Maybe hallucinating due to lack of sleep, but I believe I recall that Carl Hammerheim, a.k.a. the boss, is coming back. The question is, have you reached out to Mr. Hammerheim yet, and how does that affect your relationship with the university and what adjustments would you be making?
President Kuzma.
Yeah, that's an excellent question, actually. So, Carl Hammerheim was a provost for this university for a number of years up until, he still is, but he was on a sabbatical of sorts. He was away from the institution. Up until last year,
September of last year,
and essentially he had a tremendous amount of experience and respect on campus, and he was really good at doing his job, simply put. Now, he went to work with the Conference Board of Canada in developing their skills and post-secondary education center, which is a really neat initiative, and got to travel around the world to learn more about different post-secondary education systems. But since then, we've had the acting provost, Mark Ferguson-Pell, and over that time, we've developed a good relationship with the acting provost. Carl was slated to come back sometime in July, but now he's coming back earlier to work with the institution's massive budget cuts, especially for next year. So what this means is we're going to have, I guess you can simply put, someone who's more experienced on actually running the institution, who's going to be there. But with that being said, Martin, the acting provost, isn't going to be completely gone. He's going to be a special advisor to Indira, working on the Law and Leadership Initiative, working on different graduate student issues, and then a couple of other initiatives that's bubbled up while he was here. So that's essentially what's happening. And, you know, before this whole news happened, we used to actually meet with Carl. We tried to meet on a regular basis. He would give us some advice, some cool intel. We try to seek his advice and wisdom on certain things. And yeah, I'm really excited for this. And I think it's just overall to get this.
Thank you, Councillor Bannister.
Thank you. I have a question for the DP Ops Fly. It's a little bit of a fraught question to use a Marina vocabulary word. But why is the sixth floor sub so cold, and how can we make it warmer? Because I study there all the time, and lots of students do. And every single time you go there, half the people are in mittens and tubes because it's so cold.
Mr. President?
Yeah, thank you for the question. And there's a few parts to the question, and forgive me if I sound disconnected, but for one thing, there's a lot of mirrors or windows on the sixth floor. In fact, it's surrounded by it, so you'll just lose heat I don't know the science behind it, but that's just science in action. The second piece is the heating gets either fully blasted on or fully blasted off. This is the way that the system works. And it used to be super hot, like for the longest time, and so we just have the opposite. So we'll all get the facility staff something into it. But in the middle of the 6-4 and 6-6, it's really warm, so maybe the heat isn't descending out. But I think the large part is the windows, because in my office it is also very cool.
Follow up? So yeah, it's actually interesting because if you go into the meeting rooms and the offices of like Vog and the other guy.
Thanks.
But you look at the other guy on the other side of the offices, the meeting rooms are freezing. But the offices of DG and then the other girls. Those ones are really warm, and then the area in the middle is like slightly below average. So it's an interesting distribution there.
Yeah, and we'll get our facilities staff to look into it, but in the meantime, it's cold.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any further questions? Councilor Grookey?
I guess mine for Petros. Is the executive planning to make a response to the RevSops committee report that was published earlier?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's something that we've talked about. In case you don't know, the Renaissance Committee, it's composed majority pretty much by a ton of the staff from the Academic Staff Association here at the U of A. They've existed for a number of years. They've developed, I think, like 100 or 200 page reports. 200 page reports. Essentially talking about the different forms needed at the U of A. The problem is, in my opinion, it's poorly written, actually, and it's not concise, nor it is poorly actually organized. So talking with the provost and the university presidents, what their plans are is to actually have that redrafted in a more organized, digestible way. But when this got published, I mean, we were working on a ton of things, especially with our staff, in regards primarily to the international students' tuition issue. So that's kind of been, everything else has been on hold for long, but this is more of a long-term conversation. So we're hoping to pick this up at least next week, or at least when we get to the winter semester. Because again, there is, in terms of timelines for this conversation, it's going to be significantly stretched out compared to, let's say, December 13th or the international semester.
Follow-up question?
Yeah, sure.
Have you read it yet?
I've read the summary page, and I skipped through.
In case you're wondering why there's so many follow-up questions, A, I'm preoccupied counting ballots, and B, I actually have no one else on speakers. Councilor Mohammed?
This question is directed towards VP Lay. So on 6-4 slot, there's an empty office space that only houses chairs. When I was in the council office, one of the operations people said that if I needed a chair, I could just go to the chair room. So is there any time for any use of that office in the next...
Vice President?
There is. It's intended for a council space, but we're looking for the furnishing into it. And right now, the senior manager of student services is looking for a complete RFP process for the lower level for all the renovations. So eventually, the 6th floor will get new furnishing as well, too. So that'll be part of the whole thing. But in the meantime, we have as many shares of people. So. No, but seriously, it's intended for a council meeting room. Meeting space. So while the bigger space is for bigger committees, if you want to meet one-on-one with other counselors or with your constituents, that's a room that is intended to be used for.
Thank you. Who's on my list? Councilor Minarski.
This question is for Councilor Patel. I was just, with regards to policy committee, I was wondering if there are any plans to draft a policy for unified voice with regards to the leadership college?
No, we haven't discussed it, but I'll write that down.
Thank you. Councillor Grookey?
My question is for VP Woods. What are your thoughts on the new shuffle in the Alberta government, and do you have any plans to meet with TASOC?
Thank you for the question. I'm glad that somebody brought that up. So for those of you who may not have heard, there was a cabinet shuffle last Friday. Minister of the Kazakh is no longer a minister of advanced education. He is now a minister of... Yeah, I'll tell you all funny stories about that when we're not on the public record. But we're very excited to be able to work with Minister Hancock. He has been the minister of this portfolio before. He is the person that is responsible for the tuition freeze. The reason that all of our tuition is tied to CPI right now is from when he was minister of this area. I actually just met with him about a month ago. He is one of the most receptive MLAs that we sit down with on a regular basis, and we couldn't be more thrilled about his appointment, and we'll be seeking a meeting with him right away. We don't want to jump him right now because he's just getting into office, but I'm very confident in saying that we'll be able to get sit down with him after the break. He's one of the few MLAs whose cell I actually have, so this is ridiculously convenient for all of us. But we also thank Minister Lukasik for his service. End quotation.
I finished just in time for a moment. I was going to have to ask you to stall.
What did he get moved to, Lukasik?
Minister Lukasik is now the Ministry of, or is in the Ministry of Jobs, Tourism, and Training and Job Skills and Training. So essentially, it's kind of like this, except they focus on specifically people that require training in order to, for example, if you're going into industry, a lot of people that didn't get an education look for the opportunity to retrain because they're working a not so great part time gig at a fast food joint, for example, and they want to get a job on the rigs, and they need some mechanical experience for that. So there's funding from the government to essentially fund those people to learn so that the resources can thrive and et cetera. And he's going to be a very good fit in that portfolio, I think. And I will defer to President Kuzma.
Two quick notes. First is they also changed the ministry's name, so it's not the Ministry of Enterprise Advanced Education, it's the Ministry of Innovation and Advanced Education.
Which is very good.
And the other really interesting tip is, since my time as a student union exec, so like a year and 6-8 months, I've seen 4 different advanced education ministers who have at least 3 different ministry name changes. So it's really interesting to see how our terms are evolving in an average minister's term. Or an advanced education minister's term. So
yeah, it's really interesting. Sad that I've seen 3 in my term. So it's, yeah. Good.
Thank you. Any further questions? Seeing none, we will close question period. That takes us on to... Oh, and sorry, I should have mentioned I'm moving item 6A off the late editions again for the in the interest of its time sensitivity. So we're going to deal with item 6A on the late editions. Mohammed Hodgson moves that Students' Council, on the recommendation of Bylaw Committee, approve Bill 5 in second reading based on the following principles. Student Refugee Program Board shall allocate from the total Student Refugee Fund collected the total annual application cost required to be submitted to WSFC Ottawa to be used to fund the application costs. So again, that was the principle that was approved last meeting, and the actual changes are on the document in question. It's on the next page. Councillor Mohammed to introduce.
Yeah, so as you guys remember, 2 or 3 weeks ago, WSFC, which is a service that provides... sponsors a refugee every year to attend the U of A. They're at the FU that Students Union gives funds to, but the fund doesn't cover the application cost, and the application cost is usually around $2,500. But this year it doubled due to cuts. They lost funding from the federal government, so that fee doubled. So they were worried that they wouldn't be able to sponsor a refugee for the next year. So they came to me and they asked if we could raise the amount that they could get from SRP. So that's what this motion does. It essentially gives them the funds they need so that they can sponsor a refugee to attend the U of A. So my understanding, you're not allowed to debate the merits of it.
That's correct. So the intent of second reading is that debate is limited only to whether Bylaw Committee accurately drafted the principles into the technical phrasing in front of us. Any debate? Councillor Hodgson?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just like to maybe summarize what we did with this. So the main principle there, number 2, is essentially the wording of the first principle we passed, just was a small change, basically removing a reference to the national office being in any particular place to make it just a little bit more ambiguous in case it moves but still playing, still the fee should be directed towards the national office. The only other thing we changed was just some renumbering, and in section three, just a brief wording was changed, I believe. So that's basically it.
Any further debate? Seeing
point of the parliamentary.
Vice President Lay.
For the motion, we're looking at the 1-6A, not the attached item.
So, and this is how we typically draft. This is how we typically phrase bills of any sort. So, in first reading of a bill, you only have the principles that are presented, obviously. So they're listed in sort of in line in the order paper as you usually would. Obviously, it's not practical for us to list the entire bylaw in line in the motion, so we attach it as a separate document. The reason why the principles are just there still is basically for your reference, so you can easily reference whether or not you can reference the principles we passed in first reading to see whether or not the technical phrasing matches what we approved in terms of principles in the first reading. So what you're actually approving is the changes on the second page. What you're seeing on the first page is basically the principles that we passed the first time. So you're not voting on those principles again or anything like that. Councillor Speakman? Further debate? Vice President Lay, do you need more clarification?
I make a motion to strike E from, I guess, 1. I don't know if that would.
I don't actually think that's.
It's not in the current bylaw.
It's not in the current bylaw? Okay, it was probably a typographical error then when they were creating the list. So Lay moves to strike E from the point above the point that was added. I'm not even sure what that is because it's on the page. Is there any objection to that being carried as a friendly amendment? Basically meaning we don't have to vote on it. Okay. Since Nicole's not here, Nicole, just so you're clear, it's the E right above point two. Any further debate? Seeing no further debate, we will call to question. All those in favor of item 6A in second reading? All those opposed? Okay, that motion carries. And before we get to the end of our agenda package, I want to congratulate Councillor Hodgson and Councillor Patel on this term's Council Scholarship winners. So I will be in touch with you to get all that facilitated. With that, I believe we are at the end of our order paper, so I'd look favorably upon a motion to adjourn. Vice President Woods, Councillor Champagne, thank you very much. All those in favor? Those opposed? Okay, that motion carries. We'll quickly do attendance. President Kuzman.
Present.
Vice President Chellen. Vice President Woods.
Present.
Vice President Lay.
Present.
Vice President Lau. Governor Kelly.
Present.
Councillor Patel.
Present.
Councillor Borden. Councillor Mills.
Present.
Councillor Hanwell, Councillor Bannister.
Bannister.
Bannister's here. Councillor Schiavone, Councillor Mohammed. Councillor Grulke. Councillor Minarski. Councillor Valdez, Councillor Corbett, Councillor Horvat. Councillor Redmond, Councillor Malik, Councillor Hamid, Councillor Hansra. Councillor Lamb. Councillor Morris. Councillor Sim, Councillor Nguyen. Councillor Champagne. Councillor Speakman, Councillor Hodgson, Councillor Huang, Councillor Zhang, Ms. Schroeder for Councillor Graham, Councillor Binchik, Councillor Douglas, and I am here. All right, folks, have yourself a wonderful holidays. Merry Christmas. Happy holiday season. Greetings. We will see you in the new year. Good luck on exams. And Vice President Lay.
Before you leave for Christmas holidays, the exec will have a gift for you. So, history, but we'll send you an email once it's ready.
Also, just want to say, hella proud of you folks tonight. Like, I can't tell you how, like, ridiculous it was to sit here and just watch you folks. I can't even tell. I didn't know you had it in you, but, like you swung souls tonight, my dear. You did.
Thank you very much, folks. We're adjourned at 8:34.
No.